if I buy a franchise, the franchise is going to have a really good system to follow. It's going to have name brand recognition. The marketing is already going to be put in place. All of these things that most candidates think about why they're thinking franchising is a good idea. And the reality is some franchise brands are fabulous at delivering on the franchise promise, and some brands are terrible at delivering on the franchise promise. They just don't have a very sophisticated system, or on and on. So part of what I help people do is differentiate and focus on different aspects so that they can uncover for themselves, does this franchise actually deliver on the things that are important to me?
Alan has started and grown several multi-million dollar businesses. His mission is to help you do the same. Welcome to the Business Growth Pod, building the future one entrepreneur at a time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Business Growth Pod. I'm your host, Alan Draper. I'm excited for our guest today. Before we get there, make sure that you hit the subscribe button or the follow button on the platform that you listen to this on so that you don't miss any new episodes. Also, do me a favor real quick. If you haven't left me a review, go ahead and leave me a review. That helps me in a lot of ways, but it especially helps others who are looking for this show so they can find it. So today I would like to welcome to the show David Weaver. David is the president at Franchise Your Freedom, which is a business that connects entrepreneurs and business people with franchise opportunities that fit their specific needs, business goals, and financial goals. David is passionate about helping business owners make an impact on their communities. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
So, you know, I get this question a lot with people that are thinking about starting a business. You know, hey, should I start from scratch or should I get a system that's already in place? And one thing that I tell them is, I don't think I realized the benefit of having a system until I started, you know, my first couple of businesses without one. And now that I'm a few years down the road, I'm actually looking into a franchise that I'm really passionate about, actually. And that will be coming in the next couple of years. But I recognize that value. Do you find that with people that haven't operated a business or, you know, quote unquote, been an entrepreneur before, that they are able to see that value?
That's exactly why I'm so passionate about franchising. And I've got a couple of stories that illustrate that. But franchising for me is execution so that you can get your business to the point that it delivers back to you all of the hard work that you put into it, right? And what I mean by that is, earlier in my career, I had a corporate America job. I grew up in the Midwest. My father was in the foundry business, so we made car parts. He sold the extended family business and then bought a small jobbing foundry in Detroit. So I left Colorado, went back to Detroit to help dad with the company. And he bought an existing business, but it really had no systems in place. It was a very autocratic leader. Without getting into a lot of details, it took me two solid years to fully implement ISO 9000 quality control process. And the result of all of that work was we reorganized the entire manufacturing facility. But putting those systems in place, we had about 25 employees. We dropped down to 11 employees and we were outproducing castings in terms of revenue with 11 employees that we used to do with 25. And so what does that mean to the entrepreneur? I'll just say it's much more fun to run a business with 10 employees that produces, right, than it is to five that doesn't produce. And so that was my first aha into systems is where it's at, right? Family business is riddled with cliche, so I will just leave it at that. I wanted to raise my kids in the mountains of Colorado, so I came back to Denver. And the first job that I had was in making that transition. I worked for a small lender, and the owner of that company needed somebody to penetrate the franchise space, lend money to startup companies in a non-SBA manner, which meant I needed to research the franchisors to figure out what franchisors we were willing to partner with. So that experience gave me a lot of understanding for what makes a good franchisor good and what makes a bad franchisor bad. And there's plenty of both in the franchise space. And so just understanding kind of how those systems allows for that acceleration so that you can get a business large enough so that the business isn't about you. You're not working all those crazy hours anymore. You've developed a team. The team is now taking over the heavy load and you're making decent money. So when you put all of that together, life is really good. And until you have put all that together, you're just working a lot as an entrepreneur. And I would imagine people on your listener base can relate to that. So that's what I love about franchising. The systems just allow you to get that business to the place that you really want it, that drives that freedom and flexibility that a lot of people that I talk to are looking for in this idea that I want to start a business. I want to leave corporate America and I want to do something on my own. I'm fully convinced that franchising is the best path for that, especially if this is your first business.
What are some questions that, you know, when you first chat with somebody and they're trying to decide if a franchise is right for them, let alone which specific franchise, what are some questions that you ask to help kind of guide them in the right direction?
One question that I think is critically important is speed to break even, right? Having the candidate who's never really owned a business before understand how long it should take for this particular business model to get to cash flow positive. What a lot of people don't realize is some businesses naturally break even quickly, and some businesses naturally take longer to get to cash flow positive, and that is fundamental to that industry segment or that particular business model. The reason I think this is so important is anybody that's run a business or started a business from scratch hard and the business isn't making money and you're not paying yourself anything, right? And so when you think about sort of mapping out your business plan and how long this takes to get the business to break even, it seems like a math equation, right? It seems like, you know, if I lose $10,000 a month and the business should break even in 9 months, I need $90,000 in working capital so that I've got the business to tip over into profitability. The reason I really point this out is it's an emotional question. The real question I'm asking in that is, when are you going to be so worried about money that you're making money decisions rather than business decisions, right? Because we got to build that business. And so it's also kind of tied into risk tolerance, right? So how much tolerance do you have for this startup phase? And tipping over, that tipping point is critical to any business's success, which is why I like to emphasize that point.
What are some questions or what are some topics or some things that you take into consideration in pointing somebody toward one franchise over another? And this is coming from somebody, I actually don't know that much about the franchise model, and I understand the concept of it, but it feels like for a layperson, and I hope this isn't offensive, but it feels like, man, they're pretty much all the same. It's like, you know, and even the fees can be really similar. So how do you help guide somebody to find that right fit?
It's a very good point. And it is a common sort of misconception that all franchises are the same and all I need to do is buy a franchise, any franchise, and they're going to deliver on these things that I'm thinking that a franchise should deliver on, right? I actually coined that phrase, I call it in my consultation, the franchise promise, right? If I buy a franchise, the franchise is going to have a really good system to follow. It's going to have name brand recognition. The marketing is already going to be put in place. All of these things that most candidates think about why they're thinking franchising is a good idea. And the reality is some franchise brands are fabulous at delivering on the franchise promise, and some brands are terrible at delivering on the franchise promise. They just don't have a very sophisticated system or on and on. So part of what I help people do is differentiate and focus on different aspects so that they can uncover for themselves, does this franchise actually deliver on the things that are important to me? Right. And so that's basically the understanding what this particular franchise is going to deliver in the business model that you're buying into and how comprehensive is that business model. And so some good questions are around systems, technology, employees, et cetera. What does the support look like and how does that support show up if support's important to you and that kind of thing? But getting back to your original question, what are some things that would differentiate or have me have a candidate look at one particular franchise versus another would be customer acquisition strategy, right? So some businesses are naturally sales driven and some businesses are naturally marketing driven, right? So the example I always give is the $5 foot long on Tuesday, right? That's a Subway, right? Subway's advertisements are pulling people into the store specifically on Tuesday by giving a deal or a, you know, a buy one, get one free or something like that. Marketing-driven customer acquisition is different than sales-driven customer acquisition. So think of a painting franchise or a roofing franchise, right? You're going to have a sales team actively going out into the market to draw that customer base or build your sales funnel, and sales-driven customer acquisition happens faster than marketing-driven. It just does, right? So if a candidate is sales adverse, they don't want to pick up the phone, they don't want to cold call, they don't know how to lead a sales team, then we're going to go to a brick and mortar fixed retail marketing driven customer acquisition strategy, or we're going to look at a franchise that really has that customer acquisition pinned down and they've really systematized it so that anybody can step in there and make it happen.
I'm having a hard time coming up with an example of a franchise that, you know, the general public would know of that's sales driven.
Think of any service-based company, right? Like CertaPro Painters, their tagline is America's Painting Company. They're the largest painting company in the United States by 16 okay. miles. It's just way, way bigger. And they're a very successful sales-driven customer acquisition. And they're looking for candidates that are also very strong, or, you know, franchisees. They want franchisees that are very strong salespeople, right? Hmm. And people that can build a sales organization. So the service-based franchises are just less sort of known as franchises rather than, you know, the name brands that everybody would think of, Chick-fil-A, Subway, Orange Theory Fitness, Club Pilates, stuff like that.
Awesome. So what is your role and who pays your fee? How does that all work when you're trying to help people? Do you work for specific franchises or is it more of a, you're making the connection? How does that work?
Great question. Kind of a whole bunch of questions in that. So I do work with specific franchise brands. A lot of people don't know this. There's 4,000 companies selling franchises in the United States. Hmm. Like I said before, some of them are fabulous and some of them are not fabulous. Hmm. I have relationships with over 200 brands. So lots of different options, lots of different industry segments. And my service to the candidate is free. And the way that that works is very similar to that of an executive recruiter. I get paid by the franchisor based upon successful placement, just like a headhunter gets paid for finding a president or a COO for a company. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's nice, especially because you have so many options. That's a lot. That's a lot more than I thought you were going to say. So that an individual can find something that really fits what they enjoy and the things that they're after. You know, one thing that I hear a lot about is, and I know that there's a scale, but a lot of people want to know how much money do I have to have? How much in assets, raw assets, net worth do I need to have in order to qualify for a franchise? And I know that it's different depending on the franchise, but what would be like just kind of a scale? What would be kind of the minimum to what, you know, would be on the higher end for that?
That's a really good question and something that I talk to people about right out of the gate. So just in the 200 brands that I'm working with, we have all in investments that are under 100,000. So you're probably going to need, you know, 50 to 70,000 liquid. And then let's say it's 90 to 120,000 would be kind of a good range for that small, lower level franchise. You might get some leverage in an equipment package in a van, right? So you need a specific kind of equipment. So that would be the difference. Net worth, usually around 200, liquidity around 50 for the lower investment ranges. When you get into kind of the standard service-based companies I was mentioning, painting, flooring, roofing, gutters, windows, those are more in that 150 and can kind of climb up to 250 to 300 range. So, you know, net worth is going to be a little bit higher, liquidity, you know, about the same, 50 to 70,000. And that has a lot to do with the kind of loan that can go with that kind of a company. When you get into the traditional brick and mortar, think of a grocery anchored strip center, 1500 square feet, that looks like a Subway or a Jimmy John's, a fitness, a tutoring concept, and, you know, just envision what's in a strip center. Most of those are franchises, by the way. Those start around 300-ish and kind of climb up to as much as 600,000-800,000. So a good sweet spot might be $500,000 to get one of those open. The SBA is going to look for about a 25 to 30% cash injection, being conservative. So, you know, simple math, 300,000, you need 100,000 in cash to do a $300,000 project, you know, give or take what your credit looks like in the whole loan scenario. And then we do have options that go up to $3.5 million as the initial investment, right? So there's a lot of variation between just the brands that I work with.
Are there people that you talk to where you get to the point where you're like, you know what? I don't know that a franchise is the best fit for you. Either you need to work for somebody else, or maybe you should start your own business. Do you ever have those conversations?
All the time. And I'm a big fan of franchising, clearly, because this is where I invest my own money and I spend a lot of time. But that doesn't mean that everybody is a good franchisee or a good fit for a franchise. And so my sort of general thought is, there's three buckets of people, right? The person that doesn't have the risk tolerance to actually put their money into the game and step out and deal with that time frame to break even that I was referring to, that person looks like an employee, right? Mm. And on the other end of the spectrum, the person that doesn't value the structure and the system that you're buying into, that person really looks like, you know, the entrepreneur. And if you feel like the franchisor fees are too high, or, you know, they're always controlling you and telling you what you can do and can't do, that's a fantastic discovery in the discovery process, or your underwriting, the due diligence process, because that person should not be a franchisee. I would rather them not do that, because they're going to be frustrated. The franchisor is going to be frustrated. A franchisee looks like typically a seasoned corporate executive. They've had P&L responsibility in the past. They know how to hire and fire people. And they really kind of don't feel like they need permission anymore. They know what they need to do to get it done. Hmm. That's a really good franchisee. And they also appreciate the structure and the system that's been created for them so that they can just execute against the plan. And so that person looks like a franchisee. Military folks are fabulous franchisees because they're sort of trained and built to operate a plan, right? And mm-hmm. work system. So not everybody's fit for franchising, for sure.
You know, it feels like to me that I'm an entrepreneur. Obviously, I've started a number of companies. So I like the autonomy. I do value the systems, but I feel like there are some franchises out there that allow a little more input or a little more feedback from their franchisees than others. Is that accurate?
Yeah. One of the questions that I talk to people about are, do you like the idea of an established brand or an emerging concept, right? Because it's not about the business, it's about the franchisor. An established franchisor is naturally going to have, you know, learning curve and reiteration of their business model. And they're going to most likely have a stronger system, but also a much more structured system, right? So a lot more hand-holding or hand-slapping, you know, you're not doing it the right way kind of thing. And if that's going to frustrate you, then a more mature, established franchise is going to be not as good of a fit. An emerging brand is great because the initial franchisees all are sort of pioneer mindset. They're more like an entrepreneur. And the collaboration between those franchisees is really, really strong, right? Hey, I tried this. Did it work? And how much money did that cost? So there's a lot of collaboration going on, which is great. The downside of an emerging brand is that franchisor is just trying to grow as fast as they can. And so it's bumpy, right? It's not smooth sailing. And so if you have the idea that an emerging franchise is going to operate like an established one, they really are very different. And that kind of comes back to the franchise promise, right? What does this particular franchise deliver? And they're different.
Makes sense. Well, David, where can people go to learn more about what you do and how you can help them make a decision one way or the other about owning a franchise?
My website is www.franchiseyourfreedom.com. I've got a whole list of podcasts that I've been a guest on. I've got a YouTube channel with some videos where I'm just talking about business ownership. That really the best way, if you want to get a hold of me, is dweaver@franchoice.com. That's my email. Reach out to me in any email. Let's schedule a call and just hash it out. Where are you in the investigation process? how can I help? But my website has a lot of good tools on it that will kind of facilitate that conversation forward.
Love it. Well, thanks for your time, David, and wish you nothing but success in the future.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on the show.
If you've enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a rating. And for daily inspiration and business tips, follow Alan on Instagram. Until next time, remember, we build the future one entrepreneur at a time.